Iraq, but leaving 2,500 behind for training and embassy security. Training is a bad joke. Iraq has been almost in constant war since 1980. Iraqis need loyalty, pride, and patriotism to be effective fighters. How did I know? Here's a hint. Take a look at how Hashd al-Shaabi operates and you'll realize what the Iraqi army is missing. Who needs training from the armed forces that got whipped in Vietnam and now in Afghanistan? Iraq needs a real national government rather than foreign agents in Baghdad. Which is basically why, my friends, the US will not withdraw from Iraq. It might change the name of its combat forces, but an occupation will always be an occupation, with resistance being its only form of elimination. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. As the date of the withdrawal of U.S. combat forces from Iraq approaches by the end of 2021, Iraqis remain skeptical about whether the withdrawal is real or just on paper. In July, the United States and Iraq held a strategic dialogue session during which the two countries agreed on withdrawing all U.S. combat troops from Iraq by December 31st of this year. Now, Tahsin al-Khafaji, spokesman of the Iraqi Joint Operations Command, had announced last month that most of the combat forces left Iraq and only advisors and those working in the field of intelligence, investigation, and training remained, reiterating that they will leave within 15 days. However, Iraqis fear that there might be no real withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq, neither now after the 15 days have actually passed, nor in the upcoming new year. Rather, as many of the observers believe, there will be only a change in the name of these forces. Now, to discuss this issue with us from Al-Basra in Iraq is Mr. Ali Al-Madhoush, expert in international relations and political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Al-Madhoush. It's a pleasure having you on our show. Now, it seems that the question of the century is, will the U.S. really pull out of its of Iraq with its occupation forces by the end of this year, or will it just hang in there and stay? They might chill. They have nothing to lose.
Ya Allah, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. Thank you for hosting me on your show. Of course, as it's well known, especially to those who deal with American approach and behavior, they know that the Americans have great ambitions and intentions announced openly concerning their interests here in Iraq and the region. All this eruption and all this fallout and fragmentation and this great weakness and instability in the region is because none other than the U.S. America has reneged on covenants it had ratified with its own hands. Anyone with just little insight knows very well that if America comes out a door, it re-enters through a wider one and changes colors like a chameleon using painful methods. Undoubtedly, the U.S. cannot leave this region as it views it as spoils of war par excellence.
Well, Ms. Ali, according to the agreement between Baghdad and Washington, the American forces will keep personnel for, and I quote here, consulting, training, equipment or equipping, and exchanging intelligence information, I don't know with whom, but that's what they're saying. Now, who's to say that the U.S. won't keep all of its forces, but simply just change their name on paper, or maybe move the combat forces to Syria at a close range from Iraq at all times?
I totally agree with you. It was agreed and approved by Iraqi law and voted on by the Iraqi parliament that no foreign military presence will be allowed in Iraq after December 31, 2021, which is the last legal day for the U.S. presence inside Iraq. However, we know there's a lot of maneuvering and a lot of getting around this decision. In fact, I tell you that there are those inside Iraq who do not want America to leave, unfortunately. The order of the occupation forces to remain is not dependent on America as much as it's dependent on the interests of the certain Iraqi employers of foreign forces. It's humiliating, to be honest with you, how hard they fight to make sure the Americans remain here, crouching on the chest of the Iraqis and the region. There are many measures that America has put in place regarding the neighboring periphery, such as the border with Al-Bukamal and the border with the western region of Iraq. There is also the U.S. Embassy, which contains the largest military base, in which America uses advanced defense equipment to protect, as if it wants to stay forever. We agree with you that there is a maneuver that America has prepared for. We are sure that the U.S. forces' exit will only happen on paper, but the truth remains, and they cannot change it.
Mr. Ali, Iraqi political groups have called the formation of an alliance to expel American troops from the Arab country, from Iraq, when their mandate finishes by the end of this year, stating that Washington's attempts to prolong the presence of its occupation forces must never be taken into consideration. Do you think that is actually a viable option in case Washington proves to be actually dodging the withdrawal date? Do you think that fighting it out is the option?
It's well known that the Iraqi resistance factions, represented today by the popular mobilization forces, have become deterrent forces against the American entity and the usurping Israeli entity. This resistance has formed an equation of balance of forces. It's the resistance alliance that hurt the Americans and has become a striking tool for restoring rights and limiting the role of the Americans in the region. Today, the Iraqi government and its institutions and the Iraqi regular army undoubtedly have many U.S.-imposed restrictions and many strict measures, as they cannot proceed with the process of extracting the Iraqi right. We have harnessed a great experience in fighting the American forces after the U.S. invasion. The U.S. occupation has suffered many hard blows by the Iraqi resistance factions. Undoubtedly, America is determined and waiting for the moment when law, Sharia, custom and humanity justify for us to expel the occupier from our country, especially against an occupation that breaks all laws. So basically, after December 31, Iraq turns into an occupied country, and all occupied countries have the full right to defend their lands and stand in the face of the invaders. May God give more strength to the Iraqi resistance factions. It always does what it vows to do. The U.S. occupation is always on high alert because of the severity of the resistance valor, the awareness of its leaders and its bases that have experienced war for years now. Fighting and eliminating Daesh is an example.
Well, Mr. Ali, we know by heart by now how the U.S. operates when it desires to change reality on the ground. Especially in Iraq, we might witness a sharp escalation of chaos, of tensions within the coming weeks as part of efforts to drive U.S. Forces to stay further inside of the country under the pretext of maintaining security inside of Iraq. How do you think the Iraqi resistance forces will react to such a possible scenario?
It is no secret for everyone who follows the American dirty politics that it plays bad roles in its cultural war, its media war, its soft war, its policy of containment, its policy of interfering in internal affairs and imposing its influence by different means and under many pretexts. Today, many countries fall for American lies, such as Saudi Arabia and others, who are deluded into the existence of the illusion of an enemy represented by the Islamic Republic of Iran in order to create an excuse to sell weapons and maintain their forces and interests in West Asia. Therefore, America will create many crises inside Iraq. But the conscious, the knowledgeable, the people of politics and those who are aware are following and monitoring this phenomenon. Today, we see that the signs of Americans' embrace of some factions and its sponsorship of some parties have begun to create an unstable and abnormal situation that will place Iraq on a hot plate. Signs of these movements started from the American support for some factions and forces in order to provoke instability that will lead all Iraqi blocs to turn to other external forces to take care of Iraq and get it out of this predicament. Today, the political tensions is evident under the auspices of America and its great intervention by changing the rules of the game. But the resistance forces and factions are conscious and want to miss the U.S. opportunity to invade. Today in Iraq, both wisdom and strength are present to confront America using its own tools.
حاضرة ليعني مقارعة أمريكا بأدواتها
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Ali Al-Madhoush, expert in international relations and political commentator, for joining us from Al-Basra, Iraq. It's a pleasure to have you on our show. And please now stay tuned, because next we will be talking about what options does the Iraqi resistance have to try and push the occupation out of Iraq.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts.
Prior to Iraqi Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi's visit to the United States, the New York Times described the new agreement to withdraw U.S. forces from Iraq as nothing but a diplomatic play, while Sabrin News, channel affiliated with the Popular Mobilization Forces, criticized the agreement, saying that no American soldier will be withdrawn, their role will only be changed on paper. Why is this agreement seen as a theatrical show? Well, a number of pro-U.S. Iraqi leaders do not want to see United States completely withdrawing from Iraq. These officials propagate that the U.S. actually supports a stable and friendly Iraq, while asserting every chance they get that a long-term U.S. presence, although maintains American influence in Iraq, however, it will help them mitigate Iranian, Russian, and other forms of what the U.S. refers to as malign influence. Funny how other states that enjoy normal diplomatic non-military ties with Iraq are viewed as maligned by the U.S., while its own forces of occupation is praised as friendship. On second thought, no, it's not funny, it's actually sick. Will the U.S. ever leave Iraq? More in this following report.
Ever since the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, it was required of the U.S. occupation to exploit Iraq within a strategy that affects the entire region. However, in recent months, the so-called strategic dialogue between Baghdad and Washington, which set a time frame for the withdrawal of American forces and whose sessions took place under the threats and strikes of the Iraqi resistance led by factions of the Hashd al-Shaabi, gave many indications of how Iraq has turned from an imminent American threat against the axis of resistance in the early post-invasion stages to a threat against the presence of American occupation forces as part of this same axis. And if Iraq's positioning in the U.S. strategy was mainly related to striking the centers of power supporting the resistance movements between Lebanon and occupied Palestine, that is Syria and Iran, while making Iraq the center of an active American presence in the region, then the reality that American policy has reached does not only indicate a failure in that particular goal, but rather exceeds it to with a failure within Iraq itself. It was not required to isolate Iraq during the invasion stage from the ongoing state of conflict with the Israeli occupation entity, because it was already outside that conflict. Rather, what was required of Iraq was to be used to isolate and neutralize Syria and Iran, and then attack later on the resistance factions. However, in the years following the invasion, Washington's calculations collided with the transformations witnessed in the Iraqi arena. Iraq itself turned into a popular military and security offshoot for different resistance factions in West Asia, and indeed has become among its deterrent force. In recent months, Iraqi resistance factions affiliated with the popular mobilization Hashd al-Shaabi announced that they had entered the deterrence equation regarding al-Quds, which was announced by Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, considering that violating al-Quds equals a regional war. This particular part expresses the transformation inside Iraq, which the United States has always been trying to prevent. This was clearly demonstrated in the report of the Israeli National Security Institute at the end of last year, considering that the Zionist front in any upcoming war will be attacked with thousands of missiles, including dozens of precision missiles and armed drones from several arenas in parallel, from Lebanon, Syria, Western Iraq, and probably Gaza as well. The American military and political presence in Iraq is now threatened by the Hashd-Shaabi forces, and things could spiral towards a military escalation if the United States tries to circumvent the promises of its withdrawal at a time when the latter seems unable to enter into an open war. This development was never by chance. Washington was seeking to place Iraq on the map of confronting Syria and Iran, but the resistance axis was aware of the danger of the American scheme leading the axis to embrace Iraqi resistance forces in the post-occupation stage. This kept the American tactic trapped inside the Iraqi arena and transferred it from a strategy of dismantling Syria and Iran outside Iraq to a practical path of dismantling its own military occupation bases inside of it due to the threats of the Iraqi Hashd-Shaabi.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Stockholm is Mr. Firas Ali, political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Firas. Now, the top U.S. commander of the Middle East, his name is General Kenneth Frank McKenzie, he said last week that the United States will keep the current 2,500 troops inside of Iraq for what he said is the foreseeable future. So they're not leaving after all. So why all this propaganda of them leaving when they're not?
Well, I think it's business as usual for the Americans. They're trying to confuse the Iraqi people by conveying different type of information in this regard. Sometimes they say they're going to leave. Sometimes they say we have to make a deal first. And mostly they say we're not going to leave. We're changing the status, the title of the troops in Iraq from combating troops to advisors. But regardless of what they call them, they're only playing with words and counting on time. But no one in Iraq is interested, and especially not the resistance, to play any word feud games with them. They're going to stay. What I think is that the Americans don't have the intention to leave Iraq. They have to be forced out of Iraq because they have invested a lot of money in Iraq, and they've invested and built the biggest embassy in the world in Baghdad, second to the one that's going to come up in Beirut. And they have a military camp in the embassy, the Union 3 camp. So there's a reason for them to resist being forced out from Iraq. But I think this method that they're using by wasting time, counting on time, and trying to confuse people won't work because they think that people will forget the occupation and go on. But it won't work because the Iraqi people, especially after the assassination in January last year, have changed and the tide has changed against the United States of America.
Well, Firas, basically, despite the so-called shift by U.S. forces to a non-combat role in Iraq, they said clearly that they will still provide air support and other military aid for Iraq's fight against Daesh terrorist groups. Now, hold on a second there, because the entire globe already knows who bred, funded, and trained Daesh in Iraq and Syria. And for the love of God, I mean, America killed the two most prominent commanders in West Asia who actually fought and eliminated Daesh. And I'm talking about Martyr Soleimani and Martyr Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. How come the Iraqi population is just okay with this? They continue with their lives when they are being played by the United States of America.
I don't think generally people in Iraq are okay with this. The Iraqi people has a lot of grievances, of course, and the Americans are making them bigger to adjust the time so they can still go on and be have a presence in Iraq. But the title that they're giving to their forces, advisors, that's only a title. The Americans has already acted in Iraq since they came back in 2014 as landlords, and they will continue to do so as long as they are in Iraq. They have not heeded to the agreement they had with the Iraqi government since 2014, and they've acted like they've controlled the Iraqi airspace totally, and they've dealt with the Iraqi resistance forces and Hashd-Shaabi, which is basically part of the Defense Department in Iraq, as terrorists sometimes. And you have the unexpected visit of Trump to Ayn al-Assad, which the Iraqi government didn't know of, and actually in the assassination of the commander of the leaders of the victory leaders, as you mentioned, the Americans used more drones in Iraqi airspace in that operation than what they are allowed to in their deal with the Iraqi government. So no Iraqi accept their presence in Iraq if they don't have any personal benefit. But I would say most Iraqis despise the Americans because they remember that most of their problems from the ascending of the Ba'ath Party was because of U.S. interference in Iraq. They have not forgotten that the United States of America imposed two wars on Iraq. They forced the Iraqi government in eight years war with Iran, and they put sanctions on the Iraqi people that killed more than half a million Iraqi children. The Secretary of State in the United States at that time, Albright, said that this is a price worth to pay, and the Iraqis remember this. And actually, it was the Iraqi people's representatives in the parliament who voted to expel the U.S. troops. So the political situation in Iraq is a mess sometimes, but this vote in the parliament is historic because it shows how big the disapprovement of the U.S. forces in Iraq are.
So basically, the U.S. will try to delay its withdrawal, just as you said, to suggest that it actually has the upper hand in where it goes with its troops, instead of actually being compelled to be kicked out of Iraq and withdraw. But the Iraqi resistance seemingly has a very different plan for the U.S. occupation forces. How do you see the upcoming year in Iraq, knowing that the U.S. has never stood by its declarations and agreements when it comes to any area that it occupies?
The Iraqi resistance have been very clear about the issue. They have given the Americans a deadline, but until the 31st of December this year, New Year's Eve, to leave. And if they don't leave, they will be counted as occupation forces and dealt by that. But remember again that the resistance forces have not been idle since the assassination and the vote in parliament last year. They have notified the Americans from now and then about their presence and which type of resistance they will be forced with if they stay in Iraq. They have attacked a lot of logistical support for the U.S. forces in Iraq. It could sound like small acts, but we have to remember that targeted items are not cheap. It's state-of-art military equipment that costs $100 billion maybe. So the Americans have felt the pain, and it's obvious because the Iraqi government, which Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi leads now, has ordered Iraqi soldiers to go out and patrol those streets that the U.S. logistical support pass by to ensure their safety. But it hasn't been successful, it has been in vain. So the resistance is clever and they have managed to continue their attacks. One of the resistance forces, Kataib Sayyid al-Shuhada, actually opened the door for volunteers to fight the Americans if they stay after New Year's Eve. And just a couple of days, three or four days after they opened the window for that, they have to close it because they got more than 50,000 volunteers who are ready to fight the Americans if they're going to stay in Iraq.
So basically, Iraq is looking at a very tense upcoming new year in the event the Americans remain, but we have faith that the Iraqi resistance has the upper hand in Iraq. And I want to thank you very much, Mr. Firas Ali, for joining us to talk about this issue from Stockholm as a political commentator. Thank you very much for your contribution, and thank you.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
in the limelight.
By no means has voting blue meant a change for the better. In fact, the only real difference between Biden and Trump in terms of foreign policy is that, instead of mean tweets, more respectful language is used to give the new president the veneer of respectability, says Robert in Lakesh Journalist in an article titled, Biden's Diplomacy is Back, Falls Flat as 2021 West Asia Policy, a Miserable Flop. Stay tuned for the second part of this article, please. Throughout his political career, Biden, whatever may have been his personal misgivings, supported the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, voting to launch the invasions and working under the Obama administration on a policy to continue what he now calls the forever wars. In Iraq, unlike Afghanistan, 2021 did not see the U.S. withdrawal. Instead, it has pursued a policy of aggression and lawlessness, followed by an agreement with some people that will guarantee a U.S. presence in the country for the foreseeable future, a move celebrated by many of Biden's supporters. The Biden administration did announce a supposed drawdown in Iraq, which was to be done under the guise of ending the U.S. combat mission inside the country. Despite claims that the combat mission has ended and that relevant troops were withdrawn, 2,500 U.S. troops are still in Iraq and are likely there to stay. The reality is that the U.S. has never stated it had ground troops in Iraq to begin with. It claimed to use only special forces units, describing other troops as trainers and advisors to Iraq's security forces. Therefore, the connotations ascribed to the phrase ending the U.S. combat mission are incorrect. For there hasn't been a combat mission in the country for years. But what of the deadly Predator drone program, which became infamous under former President Barack Obama? Biden has, since taking office, refused to comment on the practice of so-called targeted killings and assassinations, which overwhelmingly kill civilians and not combatants. It is also difficult to tell exactly how many were killed in drone strikes this year, owing to a Trump-era ruling that scrapped the need to report drone strike deaths. Despite this, we do not know that the Biden administration has used the targeted killing program in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, and Somalia. In Syria and Iraq, at least two separate airstrike campaigns were undertaken by the U.S. president without congressional approval. The U.S. is still also illegally occupying a third of Syria's territory, sitting on over 90% of the country's oil resources, as well as its most fertile agricultural lands, going so far as to send poisoned seeds for Syrians to cultivate. When the Syrian government announced that it could not use the seeds because they would potentially destroy fertile soil, the U.S. regime insisted the seeds were good and refused to apologize. In the case of airstrikes in Somalia, a dangerous escalation occurred when the U.S. terrorist military forces ordered strikes against militants without even notifying the U.S. president, a move that Biden failed to condemn. On the issue of Palestine, Biden has acted as expected. After all, he openly describes himself as a Zionist. When Palestinians were being ethnically cleansed from their homes in East Al-Quds so that illegal settlers could steal their properties and racist lynch mobs attacked Palestinians around Al-Quds Old City, Biden remained completely uncritical of the Zionist regime's policy of protecting the settlers and attacking Palestinian protesters. In May, when the violence escalated into a war between Gaza and the Zionist regime's military, during which the fake regime of Israel killed 270 Palestinians, the president repeated the age-old "Israel has the right to defend itself" line, a trope repeatedly used by Washington when Tel Aviv carries out what have become routine civilian killing sprees. The Zionist regime's current Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, is openly opposed to a two-state solution and has rebuffed American demands to hold settlement expansion. Yet Biden has yet to muster a word of criticism of his Israeli counterpart. Instead of reining in its ally, the U.S. approved $1 billion of additional funding for the Zionist regime's Iron Dome air defense system to pay for what amounts to the inconvenience caused when killing Palestinians with U.S. taxpayer-funded bombs causes a reaction from the besieged Gaza Strip's armed groups. On Iran, Biden claimed he was going to differ from his predecessor Donald Trump, stating during his 2020 campaign that we've lost our standing in the region and vowing a change of tone and policy from Trump's openly hostile stance. Since he took office, though, Biden's promises to force his way back into the Obama-era Iran nuclear deal were soon forgotten. And instead, he has charged forward with Trump's maximum pressure campaign. Instead of attempting to make peace, Biden has added even more sanctions to those levied by Trump, which were previously criticized and condemned by the International Court of Justice as a violation of international law. The Biden administration's first year of diplomacy first policy in the West Asia region has closed as many veterans of U.S. elections predicted. By no means has voting blue meant a change for the better. In fact, the only real difference between Biden and Trump in terms of foreign policy is that instead of mean tweets, more respectful language is used to give the new president the veneer of respectability, while carrying on an all-too-familiar violent and imperialistic West Asia region foreign policy.
The medical device industry is the second most profitable global commercial enterprise. This is followed by oil, gas, and petrochemical sectors. Iran's healthcare system is far more modern than many might expect. From family planning to organ transplants and cosmetic surgery, the medical sector is progressive and advanced. Considered a high-tech industry, the medical device field is heavily regulated, with large investments going towards R&D activities. A lot happens behind the scenes before medicine and medical treatments reach a patient.
Season's greetings and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This time, we will venture through Iran's medical device industry while giving center stage to advanced laboratory technology. We'll take a look at some of the major players in this field, plus check out why this technology is important to the health sector. Moreover, we will uncover the contributions of this industry to the national economy. So, let's start the show.
Our journey took us to a knowledge-based company that specializes in producing high-tech medical lab equipment and instruments. Noyon Negin Parsian was first established in 2006 with the goal of improving the quality of medical diagnosis and scientific advancement in labs. The ultimate objective is to improve the health of the patients.
I remember back then, since the 2007, it was around 14 years ago, the technology was not so fast in this area. So we have to seek for opportunities in order to work with the good brands. And from that time, our aim was to introduce the technologies that works in regarding a better diagnosis and also service better for the human beings. And from the very beginning, it was our aim in order to work in this field, and also it was the target to reach there.
This knowledge-based company began its activities in the field of research. Then it moved on to manufacturing and importing medical lab tech.
By working with very good brands, we were managed to introduce high-quality products, especially in the field of in vitro diagnostic devices and also reagents. And we introduced many big brands into this, into this system. And at that time, I remember there was very few suppliers in this case. But since the technology went through, and also the new platforms have been introduced to the society, the quality of the services also increased, and we were managed to adapt ourselves with the life, and also with the performances of the devices that were offering to the human services.
Among its products, one can name controllers or diagnostic kits for infectious diseases and cancer. Plus, they make lab consumable products such as thinners and substrate liminal, which is a type of chemical that reacts to light as a byproduct. In short, this company has strived to automate manual systems in medical labs. Previously, most processes in labs were carried out by hand. This is both costly and time-consuming, with low output. Having numerous people working on one lab project also increases the margin of error, which is potentially detrimental to the final diagnosis of a patient.
Back then, I remember there was very, very few automatic systems. Everything was done by manual systems. I mean, when you go to the laboratory, you would find out that everything is done totally by manual systems. There has been some employees over there which were working just like shift by shift and process by process until a test has been done. And it was a very, very costly and also at the same time time-taking, and also with a very, very low output. The results were not that accurate.
Importing medical products can rack up a mighty bill for labs. Importing processes and clearances can sometimes take months before critical products reach consumers. It's noteworthy that imports cost billions in capital flight. And more often than not, patients are the ones paying the high prices of these imports. With this in mind, many domestic manufacturers have stepped in to fill the market void and reduce dependency on imports.
One of the main goals of this company is to indigenize local knowledge and technology by strengthening research and development. It has received its permits from the National Medical Device Directorate and the Ministry of Health and Medical Education.
So, finally speaking, I remember it was the year 2012 or 2013 that we found out some potential suppliers and started drawing out the requirements of what is the requirements of the market, what the customer is looking for, what they want from us, and how we can match their requirements with the potential suppliers, and how we can build this line in order to move this technology and transfer this technology back to Iran. It took a long time because we have got around, if I say correctly, two or three failures until we found out how we can reach to this technology in order to present it to the to the Society of the Laboratory and also Diagnostic Systems in Iran.
Among its competitive advantages, one can name the low cost of production relative to foreign brands. Additionally, it has access to advanced scientific knowledge and research that already exists within the country. Dependability and accuracy are key components that increase the quality of its products. And manufacturing them with precision and consistent quality is no easy task.
Well, the first thing talks in Iran is the quality. We never sacrifice the quality in comparison with anything else. Despite on pricing, performances, after sales, the quality talks first. Because we're dealing with something which in its platform and its results, the quality is the first thing that talks. If you go to a laboratory and you don't have quality, you have nothing. In other words, in laboratory, the performances and quality and the pricing are the things that go step by step. It means that you first need to have a quality, and then you need to have a performance, and later on you need to have a price. So
this knowledge-based company collaborates with academic institutions and research firms. Plus, it makes its products along the axis of exports, meaning all productions follow stringent national and international standards.
From 2015, everything was totally clear from us. The path was very clear, and we found out that it's a very great opportunity in order to present the system. And officially, by the year 2017, we started launching a very, very fast, reliable platform that was working based on the chemiluminescence. And that platform was totally automatic. I mean, the majority of the process that you could see in the laboratories that has been done by manual back then in 2007, in 2015 was totally automatic. Everything, I mean, from the random access processes, by the assay menus, by the processing the human bloods and also serums, until getting the results and the other things. And it was very, very attractive for me because it was the first time that an Iranian company could manage to present this platform in a very, very reliable way. And it was, unlike the others, it was not, affected by the sanctions that we had.
This company stands on the cusp of exporting its products and has already begun sending samples to European markets. It is also open to cross-border collaborations, particularly with neighboring regions, as most of these nations share many of the same values and domestic demands.
From the very beginning, Iran has the eye of the exporting of the products. And I can say for sure, in comparison with the other international brands, we have got the advantages of the pricing. And if we keep the quality stable, definitely we would be the winner of the game. Definitely the safest way is not going far away. But we are a little bit aggressive in this case, and we started working with some countries in the Europe. We just sent samples over there in order to be performed, in order to be checked, and we also were participating in medical trade shows in order to show that we are also having the capabilities of doing the production, and we are a brand made in Iran, but we are also proud of being in Iran. We do not want to change something, we do not want to be faked. And we want to say that despite having a lot of troubles of sanctions, we are here, we are still alive, and we want to keep going forward.
At the height of the U.S.-imposed sanctions, Noyan was taking big strides in advancing biotechnology products and other knowledge transfers. This company believes that with diligence and ingenuity, it can create exceptional opportunities despite challenges posed by the sanctions.
I do remember when the first sanctions happened, it was just like a shock to the society because everyone was locked. What to do, how to do, how to deal with these things, how to transfer the money, and so on. But we learned. We learned how to make the processes much more clear, how to find the balance between the supply and production, how to make the quality stable. I can say for sure, nobody can say the society is not affected by the sanctions. But the point is that we learned and we become strong. There's a saying that whatever doesn't kill you makes you strong. And it definitely makes the Iranian society strong. Because now, in comparison with, I can say 13 years ago, there are at least 100 times manufacturers in this field. And they're trying to upgrade their quality. I do believe it's a beneficial advantage for the Iranian society. Otherwise, if you see that we are going back to the history on 2007, more than 95% of the consumption in the whole area of the laboratory has been imported from the outside. While now, I can say at least 60%, at least 60% has been manufactured, locally. And in comparison with the manufacturers that are located outside, our quality talks.
When the coronavirus broke out, domestic knowledge-based companies led the battle by expanding their production lines. All medicine used to treat COVID-19 have been manufactured domestically so far. This goes to show how the industry is on top of scientific developments. There are roughly 500 medical equipment manufacturers active in the country that produce tens of thousands of products. Here's more on the market.
Iran has a robust industry for producing medical devices. The private sector has invested millions towards manufacturing in this field. The bulk of machine parts, including software, can be developed and engineered by domestic firms. It might be interesting to know the domestic medical device market has grown by 9% since last year. This is why the global average growth was about 6%. That's based on the Office of Medical Equipment at the Ministry of Health. Back in 2018, the National Medical Device Directorate estimated Iran's market in this field was worth nearly $3 billion. The exact figure for this year has not been updated, but it's likely to be much higher. According to the directorate, currently 105 Iranian types of medical equipment and products are exported to 55 countries worldwide, in which your diagnostic kits are at the top of the list with around 30% of the export market. Roughly 500,000 types of medical devices and equipment are made across the globe. Iran is able to domestically manufacture 56% of those available in the world. Important items such as vital sign monitors, operating room monitors, and incubators are among medical devices being exported to Asia-Pacific right now.
Medical devices are not the only products keeping the healthcare industry afloat. Pharmaceutical productions also greatly contribute to this sector. And the pharmaceutical industry is pulsing with new medicines each year. Some 3,000 medicines in thousands of variations are currently produced in Iran. There are some 120 pharmaceutical companies nationwide and around 70 units that specialize in producing raw material needed in this sector.
According to officials, pharmaceutical imports have dramatically dropped by 90% over the years. Domestically produced medicine has helped save the country billions. Iran reduced its currency flight from over $4 billion in 2017 to nearly half that number in 2020. That's going off of statistics from the Food and Drug Administration. Figures from the National Pharmaceutical Syndicate show Iran's domestic pharma market was worth $4.5 billion in 2021. 97% of the pharmaceuticals currently consumed in the country are also domestically produced, making the country nearly self-sufficient in this area.
All right, everyone, it is time for me to step aside for several minutes as my good friend and colleague is about to take you on another educational adventure. Enjoy.
The thirst of innovation over the last decades has led to tremendous developments in technology. One of these industries is software technology. Software development can improve the client's experiences and bring about significant changes in society.
Has it ever happened to you to go to a medical center to make an appointment and you had to stand in a long, boring queue? Or perhaps when you come to visit a doctor, you have to carry with you a bunch of papers to show your health record? That's absolutely exhausting. But when technological innovations find their ways into our lives, we no longer need these papers. Today we came to Kushan Tech Company to show you how technological innovations have changed the ways we deal with all these situations in medical centers. Could you please tell us about your company and what inspired you to run this business?
In 2016, we were a group of master's students that need data for our thesis in the field of data mining in health systems. We went to Sarem Hospital and asked Dr. Sarem to give us some data. He accepted us with open arms and gave us what we need. We are so appreciative of him. But we found out that there is a big gap between IT and health industry. We recognize that in Iran, not only there are some weaknesses in IT-based technologies, but also we have really lack of data. And the second one has a very, very higher importance. A large part of collected data are not valid and nor usable. Therefore, in 2016, we started as a small team in Sarem Hospital and began developing software and collecting valid data. And first launch of our software was in 2017. After a few years, we developed our software and grew up. Then we officially found our company with brand of KushanTech and started marketing of our software products.
Choosing the latest software in the field of health, this Iranian company aims to meet the software needs of hospitals to take steps towards improving the general health of the country.
For many organizations such as hospitals, reliable software is incredibly vital. For this reason, this Iranian company has designed electronic health records that meet customers' and hospitals' needs in the most efficient way possible. What makes electronic health records different from paper health records is the fact that it collects precise medical data on patients so doctors in different fields of expertise can develop a comprehensive view of the patient's health, therefore they can make a better decision.
Electronic health record gives patients the chance to describe their situation in details, and it is not limited in time and space. This reduces medical errors, prevents missing of information, and lays the groundwork for analysis and research.
I was wondering if you could tell us more about your software innovation.
We have several software in healthcare systems, including EHR or electronic health records, PACS, that is medical imaging technology, BI dashboard for hospital, LIS, which is about laboratory processes, and health ticketing, which includes ticketing and queue management. Now we are developing new software, adding new feature to and customizing our software, and also maintenance, support, and training of our products.
The innovation of electronic health records in this company has facilitated so many aspects of our medical encounters. In addition to patients' queue management, it has also found its way into laboratory, radiology, operation rooms, and it has also contributed to the treatment process and the overall management of hospitals.
Well, as we could see, the EHR platform is integrated in different modules of the hospital software. One of these modules is PACS, which is a software for receiving radiology images and files and providing a quick accessibility in all medical centers.
What makes your company different?
Let me categorize the advantages of our products. First is the clean and valid data feed to researchers in the field of health system. The second is paperless document. For example, we do not have any paper document in Sarem Hospital. It will save large portion of cost and help the environment. The third is ease of use for physicians and patients. And the fourth is better diagnosis for physicians. They can see the whole story of a patient by one click. In summary, our products reduce costs and increase efficiency and performance of hospitals.
Another significant dimension of this innovation is health ticketing and queue management in medical centers. all steps from admission to visit are done automatically. And this results not only in the improvement of the general health, but also in the customer satisfaction.
Do you have any bright plan for the future?
Kushantec is going to have a comprehensive EHR system all over Iran, so that any Iranian be able to access their medical data easily, and also assist physicians to reach better diagnosis by use of artificial intelligence on valid data. In a nutshell, Kushantec wants to create a decision support system, or DSS, for health system. In order to achieve this important goal, we need assistance of medical institutes, hospitals, and of course the government.
At the end of the day, what is so valuable about this innovation is saving our precious time and money, and also, of course, at the same time, protecting the environment. We have come to the end of this edition. I'll see you next time. And until then, stay safe and bye-bye. We are near the end of our program, but before we go, let's take a look at some interesting news and trends in Iran's medical sector. After mourning the loss of his leg, an Iranian inventor decided to create his own prosthetic knee in order to stay active. And this is when the Technology Center for People with Different Lifestyles was born.
The startup was established in the Incubation Center of Iran's University of Medical Sciences. The prosthetic knee is suitable for people with amputations above the knee. It's strong enough to be used in vigorous sports such as running and cycling too. The developer says the most important feature of this product is its low price relative to foreign brands.
As the medical device and pharmaceuticals industry grows inside the country, it is also expanding operations beyond Iran's borders. Now, talks are being held between Iraqi and Iranian officials to increase the presence of Iranian knowledge-based companies in Iraq.
An official with the Iraqi Innovation Fund says Iranian knowledge-based companies should be present in Iraq. The official added that this would help increase trade relations. Knowledge-based companies in the fields of oil, gas, pharmaceuticals, and medical devices are among those that were discussed. The hope is to establish a permanent Iranian exhibition in these fields of activity in Iraq's Kirkuk province.
The production of medical devices in Iran goes back to centuries ago and has a rich history. This is why the National Museum of Iran put on a unique virtual exhibit showcasing centuries-old Iranian medical equipment.
The display was held on the National Day of Doctors, which marks the birthday of Avicenna, who is regarded as the father of early modern medicine. The online exhibit was also carried out in a bid to commemorate the enormous sacrifices Iranian healthcare workers have made during the coronavirus pandemic.
We are fresh out of time for our program today. Happy New Year to you all, and thank you for tuning in. Stay safe.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6040 kHz, and in southern Africa, via shortwave 25.